You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am Carolyn Yeager, and you are listening to the Revisionist Report on Saturday, May 14th. Last week, I introduced you to this program and to my definition of revisionism, also to some concepts about facts and beliefs. If you did not hear that show, you can go to the archives to listen to it. I will also make it available on my website, which is www.carolynyeager.com. My guest this evening is Rudy Pershall. He has a website at http://rudolfpershall.com. I'll spell that R-U-D-O-L-F, short dash, P-U-E-S-C-H-E-L. On the opening page of his site, these words are written. I'm going to read them because I think it's the best introduction to Rudy and what he has to tell us tonight. He writes, in summer 1945 at Potsdam, when the Allies affirmed their resolve of Yalta to expel 15 million Germans from their homeland, Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin assured U.S. President Harry Truman that the displacement of 3.5 million Sudeten Germans would not constitute a violation of human rights because those people were to leave their homeland voluntarily. At this time, such a statement appeared unbelievably absurd. Why should Sudeten Germans, living on Bohemian and Moravian soil for 8 centuries and keeping a proud tradition established by their forefathers, want to leave their long-loved homeland? But Stalin knew what the German citizens of Czechoslovakia did not know. Czechoslovak President Beneš, his friend and ally since 1935, was determined to make life unbearable for the Germans. Thus, terror began to reign for a humiliated, outlawed, deprived of their possessions, and partly murdered national minority. Ironically, the laws created in 1945 that legalized the German purge today still exist in the Czech and Slovak republics, the two successor states of what once was Czechoslovakia. Her second cessation is most likely a direct consequence of the loss by expulsion of 25% of her workforce. That is, we'll talk about that. This, however, is little consolation for the anguish, pain, unhappiness, and in many instances death this blatant ethnic cleansing event has caused its victims. So with that introduction, welcome to the show, Dr. Pershall.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry, I know how to pronounce your name, and I'm saying it wrong. It's Pershall, Dr. Pershall, and since we are friends, I'm going to call you Rudy. Is that fine?
Please do.
Well, it's nice to have you here tonight.
Thank you.
This is a very important subject, underappreciated and not well understood, and we're going to try to correct that a little bit tonight for our listeners. You have let's first tell them your background. I wrote a little announcement to some people on my mailing list about tonight's program, and I said that you were a native of Czechoslovakia, and someone already has written to me and said no, he's a Sudeten German, and it wasn't Czechoslovakia until after World War One, which of course,
well, you know, that's, it was Czechoslovakia when I was born, so you are not all off base.
No, yes. Yes, I should have said born, because you're not really a native in that sense. You know, you're
but
not
Czech.
So explain yourself, please.
German.
What was that?
I would prefer to be called Sudeten German instead of Czech.
Yes, yes. Tell us when you were born, how long you were there, and what your particular circumstances were.
Well, I was born in 1934, meaning I was 12 years old in 1946 when we got expelled. Five of us, my brother, my younger brother was 7, my grandmother was 79, and my parents and I were in between. And because I was young, it didn't really touch me deeply for a long, long time. And when you have, you know, going to school, founding a family, and so on and so forth, I don't think it was a big surprise that I ignored the tragedy for most part of my life. But during some encounter with my mother, I realized how deeply hurt she was. And since then, this was in fall of 89 in Berlin, just a few weeks before the wall fell. Since then, I am all active in trying to find and disseminate the truth.
The truth, yes. That's difficult, isn't it?
It is. But I think there are many people who are handicapped because they want to follow a career, especially in Germany. But once you are retired, like I am, I think it's getting easier.
Well,
so I'll be doing it as long as I can.
I'm sorry, we're having a little bit of breakup here. I'll go ahead. Let's also clarify how you came to the United States. Were you under the auspices of Operation Paperclip in any way?
No, I was not old enough, meaning I was not famous or popular enough. I had the fortune to get an offer at the California Institute of Technology shortly after I graduated from the University of Gießen. And it was a temporary offer. It was a postdoc offer, but I managed to make it a lifelong experience.
Okay, and so you are, what kind of a scientist are you?
I'm a physicist by training.
All right. And now you are working in the humanitarian area and human rights.
That's correct.
Yes, on your own, so to speak.
On my own, yes.
All right, now you...
With support of people like you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, I certainly do support what you're doing. Since I did read the introduction on your website, I think it introduces people to the whole concept. Let's just go ahead with the fact that you have written a new paper, and you've done quite a bit of writing, and you've also done a lot of translating of other people's writings, which might come up, but I won't confuse the listeners by going into too many things. They can go to your website and read about it. Tell us about this paper, which is called Czechoslovak and British Concepts of a Sudeten German Genocide, and why you wrote it and why it's important.
Well, the history is some 5 years ago, I investigated the effects Czechoslovak legionnaires had in Siberia on the Civil War and the Bolshevik Revolution. So I went to the archives at the Hoover Institute of War, Revolution, and Peace at Stanford University and went through the Czechoslovak files. And what I found was a manuscript, undated, unauthored, which in much detail explains why population transfers should be done, why they are important, and how they should be done. And this was exactly pretty much the way it happened. And this contradicted the official, political correct view that we had to be expelled because of the cruelties that the Germans did to the Czechs during the Nazi occupation, and further cohabitation of the state was impossible. But I didn't know exactly what to do with this manuscript. And another manuscript was issued by the Social German, the Sudeten German Social Democrats in exile in England at this time, telling the world just exactly why those forced population not really know what to do with it. But last year, I got a hold of a book by Martin Brown, a British historian. His dad is Brit, his mother is Czech, and he discussed in much detail the relationship between the British Foreign Office and the immigrants from Czechoslovakia, including Benes and the Germans, the Social Democrat Jacques, in their relationship and dealing with officials of Great Britain. And
okay,
all
this
of a sudden,
book,
it's,
this book is titled, did you give the title, Dealing with Democrats?
Dealing with Democrats.
Yeah, it was published in Frankfurt in 2006.
Correct.
Okay.
And his description of events in Great Britain in the 40s, 1940 to 1944, all of a sudden shed light on what I found at Stanford University. And what it is, essentially, is that some a branch of the Foreign Office in London had authorized a man by the name of David Mappert to write a paper or consider a large-scale population transfers after the war. And this was exactly what I had found in this manuscript at Stanford. The title is different, but the content is very, very similar. So what this means is that the Brits have actually come up, or maybe at least followed a desire by the Czech government in exile to come up with plans for the expulsion of minorities and the Sudeten Germans in particular. And this means what I have learned is the British government not only tolerated the expulsion of 3.5 million Germans out of Czechoslovakia. Instead, they actively participated in it. And I think that's a pretty good discovery.
Well, I do too. I'm very interested and impressed with this paper and what it contains. And I would just like to say, to bring this home to people, that right in the beginning you say that historiography, and this fits so well with my program, because I'm talking about the difference between facts and beliefs that create or false history that's created and that people believe, and you say that the this historiography that we have, that it was a spontaneous reaction of the Czechs to the brutality of German occupation that caused the Czechs to turn on these German citizens of Czechoslovakia that had been made to be citizens of that country after World War I. They had been living happily and all in their what was essentially a German territory, and then that territory was stuck on to the state of Czechoslovakia, and they were then a minority group of that state. And they had not mistreated the Czechs. They had not, done anything to the Czechs all during the war.
Not usually. After, after Heydrich was, the Reich Protector Heydrich was assassinated, bad things did happen.
Well, I'm talking about the German Czechs, if you would call them that, who were living there. I'm not talking about the National Socialist Party or the Wehrmacht, although we can go into that too. But these
yes,
people
right.
were just basically good neighbors and continued on. They weren't attacking Czechs, although they did probably have some different political, they probably had different political alliances. But once the Red Army got there or got close enough, then the Czech people started turning on these German their German
right.
neighbors, and it got worse and worse, actually. Is it correct to say that it went from late 1944 to 1947?
Well, the uprising was in April, May actually. I mean, only a few days before the Germans capitulated unconditionally, did the Czechs rise up against the Germans.
Well, sure, but then didn't the expulsion continue on until almost 47, or
yes.
Do I need some clarification there?
Yes.
It wasn't as bad, but there were still German people that had tried
yeah.
to stay were still being sent
well,
out.
It started with the so-called wild explosions. You know, people were driven from their homes within 50 minutes. They could only take along what they could carry. And we were driven by foot or across the border. And then after Potsdam in August of 1945, it was the Allies insisted on a humane and orderly explosion. Mm-hmm. And this was, we were put on trains, I mean, cattle cars, unclean, 30 people in a wagon, including luggage and so on and so forth. It was, well, if they call it humane, that's their problem.
Like
I tell you, my mother never recuperated from it. It was a traumatic experience.
Yes, and of course, let's continue with this part of it for now, just a little bit more. These people were dispossessed of their property. Their homes were moved into by Czechs as soon as they moved out, practically. And they were sent, like you said, 15 minutes to pack up some belongings. They had a limit on how much weight, I think, that they could take with them.
I believe it was 30 kilograms.
Yeah, 30 kilograms, that's not much. That's not much, is it? And so they tried, who knows what they were taking, cooking pots or something, you know. I mean, they just couldn't take anything.
Well, you know, amazingly, many people took photographs. I mean, all the pictures we have available and we see now, which prove what and how it had happened, they took along. It was completely useless initially, but... People like memories. They take along what they
take. Absolutely. You know, I have a briefcase in my closet, and it has all this memento stuff, all these papers, photographs, you know, family stuff and so on that I have collected there. And I have said that that's one thing I will take if my house would be on fire or something. I'd have to run out, you know. I mean, that's one I want to be sure and take that.
Yeah.
So I understand that very well. So this is now of these now the number of Sudeten Germans from Czechoslovakia was about 3.5 million that were expelled, and of that, how many died
during the explosion?
Yes, how many were killed?
It depends who you listen to. German organizations talk about 240,000 to 270,000. The Czechs talk about 30,000 to 40,000.
Yeah, well, it is 250 or more thousand.
Okay. I talked to Miss Dedina about it. She's Czech, and she wrote at length about it, and she is convinced the higher number are more realistic than the lower number.
Yes, yes. Well, we know that they want to lower the number. So, to make this clear about the plan that this was under, that's the thing I'd like you to talk about next. Now, you already said that the British, you found evidence, written evidence, documents, that show that British intelligence officials were working with Edvard Beneš, who was the leader, the government in exile of the Czechs. We're going to have to take a break, I think, pretty soon, but not yet. Okay, government in exile of the Czech government, he was in London, and another man who was in London was the leader of the Social Democratic Party of the Sudeten Germans. Is that correct? Who was also in London cooperating with the British?
He was, the German was the British favorite initially. I mean, both arrived in London in 1930, Beneš late 1938 and Jaksch early 1939. So they started pretty much at the same time. But the Brits realized, you know, the Germans had no way, no place to go. The Czechs at least had a land, a so-called fatherland, where they could eventually go back to, because it's a Slovak. So Jaksch was real in charge of the whole movement, but first changed very, very quickly. And I believe this paper that Mabet wrote is part of the evidence. They were influenced by, well, So Yaksh was pretty much, pretty soon, not dumped, but he remained without much influence.
Well, I want to make it clear here that you, so that people really understand what was going on, is that Yaks, spelled J-A-S, S, what is it, S-C-H-K?
J-A-K-S-C-A.
Yeah. He was head of the national of the Social Democratic Party.
Correct.
Okay, we'll take that up in just a minute. We need to take our break now. Thanks.
30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Do you need help getting your child to behave? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'm willing to give away thousands of my best-selling total transformation programs for free. All you do is tell us how the program works for you and your family. Did it turn around your child's behavior? Did the screaming and arguing stop in your home? Is he doing better in school? The total transformation has helped hundreds of thousands of families. I want to see what it can do for you, and I'm willing to let you have it for free. Just order my program, use it with your child, then send me your feedback. I'll refund the purchase price of the program. You keep the Total Transformation Program forever, for free. You don't have to struggle with your child's bad behavior one more day, because now you can try my Total Transformation, and the program will be free.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now. 1-800-583-1093. 1-800-583-1093. That's 1-800-583-1093.
Estrogen dominance, a brand new 20th century disease, a phrase coined by Dr. John R. Lee 35 years ago. Dr. Lee proved that all the estrogen that is coming from food and water is having a devastating effect on our health. The rapid rise in breast cancer, uterine cancer, prostate cancer, weight gain, osteoporosis, feminizing of our boys and early puberty of our girls, and also the destruction of natural killer cell function. Natural killer cells are our only protection from cancer and viral infection. Dr. Lee found that using natural progesterone, about 20 milligrams per day, would not only reverse osteoporosis, but would greatly reduce the cancer issues, as well as dozens of other health challenges we face today. Visit our website, healthlinkamerica.com, to order the DVD on hormone imbalance. Learn how hormone imbalance destroys the immune system and get started on natural progesterone and Cyto-S. It will not only change your life, it may in fact save your life. Once again, that website is healthlinkamerica.com.
Okay, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Dr. Pichel is with me, and we're talking about the Sudeten German expulsion from Czechoslovakia and the part that, the role that Britain played in that. Now, I was trying to make the point, Rudy, that Jacques, well, all right, in 1933, Adolf Hitler became chancellor, and the National Socialist Party became the most popular party in Germany. Now, how did that affect the Germans in the Sudetenland? Or they turned to Hitler and the National Socialists, but did that not happen until 1938 when they became part of Germany again, or did it start in 1933?
Well, initially in 1933, the Social Democratic Party was the strongest party in Sudetenland, the strongest political party in Sudetenland. The Social Democrats.
Okay, yeah, all right.
The strongest political party in Sudetenland.
Right.
But then came the economic crisis, and the Germans were more affected than the Czechs. The Germans lived in the industrialized region. They didn't get desperate, and here comes Germany, Nazi Germany, full employment. Everything is looking good. And so the Dayton Shermans, little by little, turned toward Germany for help. And that's how Heinlein rose up and gained the majority, a big majority. And Jaksch and his Social Democrats lost out.
Yeah, well, but we can look at that in this way, that everything was going along fine with between the Germans and the Czechs in Czechoslovakia there, sort of. And then when an economic crisis hit, then the Czechs made sure that they got the jobs and the Germans didn't. And so that turned the Germans to who would help them. That's natural, right?
I think it is.
So that was a mistake of the Czechs. But, you know, they never wanted the Germans there anyway, did they? I mean, isn't the lesson behind this that from the documents that you found that Benesch was looking for ways to transfer the Germans from his state way back when? And when did that start?
Well, I guess it started at the time the state was founded in 1918.
Oh.
It got progressively worse. And in the 30s, there was no question. I mean, let's correct one thing. The Sudeten German Social Democrats were in bigger danger in terms of Nazi occupation than were the Czechs. And indeed, when Jaksch and his associates, they tried to convince the Czech government desperately to do something against taking over the Sudetenland by the Wehrmacht. But Benesch wouldn't want anything to do with it. He preferred to resign and leave the country. And Jaksch followed him not because he was expelled by anyone like most of the Sudeten Germans. He was in danger of being jailed or worse, and he fled together with some 5,000 of his compatriots. I mean, these were actually genuine refugees from Hitler and the Gestapo.
Well, all right. But now you're saying, though, that Jaksch and the Social Democrats were more against, they were serious foes against the National Socialists, who were now in power, and they were very much against it. They wanted the Sudeten Germans to remain loyal to take the side of the Czechs if there was a side to be taken against Germany, because they were Czech nationals, Czech citizens.
Yes.
And they were very anti-Nazi. I mean, these Social Democrats were very, very anti-Nazi. So they, you can see that they would not be looked upon favorably by the National Socialist Party. And
anti-Nazi and pro-Czech. Let's point this out too.
What?
They felt more as Czechs than as Germans. Well, let's put it this way: they asked the government to work together to prevent the takeover by the National Socialists.
All right, and now you're saying that that the Sudeten German leadership of this particular party wanted to prevent the takeover by Hitler, but Benesch did not want to try to do that. He didn't want to stand up. I think the man was not a fighter. He was not much of a hero, but he's been made into a hero. But he preferred to just run off to London and let the British go along with the British and whatever they wanted to do.
He took the easy way out.
All right. And so Adolf Hitler, with the approval of Britain and other nations, moved in and occupied that territory, right?
Yes.
Okay. And so then all these Sudeten Germans became, you know how people do, they became, and I'm not putting them down for this, people change party allegiance depending on what is, how things are working in politically for them. So they all became National Socialists, really, and there were very few Social Democrats left. All right, we have to go to another break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
This is your call to action, America. It's time to get prepared. Food prices, fuel prices, dollar collapse, earthquakes, tornadoes, nuclear meltdown. Where's your plan? Get one at the Get Prepared Expo in Springfield, Missouri, May 14th and 15th, downtown at the Expo Center. Learn about survival economics, gold, silver, emergency food, water filtration, solar and wind power, heirloom seeds and gardening, how to prepare and defend your home, and hear from John Moore as he speaks about global warming and what the government isn't telling you, and John Stadtmiller with what is in store for you. Plus, meet the 2012 candidate for President of the United States, and Sheriff Richard Mack and Larry Pratt. All this and much more at the Get Prepared Expo, May 14th and 15th in Springfield, Missouri, for the low admission price of only $7. Get details now at GetPreparedExpo.com. That's GetPreparedExpo.com. What happens next is up to you. GetPreparedExpo.com. GetPreparedExpo.com.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
You now, I've kind of been trying to make a lot of points here, and I haven't maybe been fair to Rudy and allowed him to speak enough, so I'm going to do that now. But first, I just want to point out and make it clear that getting back to Jox, he when he went to London, and I understand that he was head of the Czech German Social Democrats at that time, and once the National Socialists were moving in, he was going to be imprisoned probably as an agitator, because he was against the National Socialist leadership. So he went off to London, and he joined Benesch, and so there was a kind of a strange collusion going on there. But and while he was representing the Czech Germans, he really wasn't anymore the representative of most of them, because the members of his party had become very small, wouldn't you say?
Yes, that's true. And also, it was a one-sided attempt of a cooperation. Jack tried hard to work together with Benesch, but he was rejected more and more as Benesch grew in popularity with the British. And then there was a split. You know, some of the Social Democrats decided to fight with... And then Jaksch found out what plans there are, and he was very much opposed to it. But some of his contemporaries decided to work with Benesch in spite of it and join him and sabotage the social democratic movement.
So you see Jacques as being a pretty good man, in your opinion, and standing up for some things that would have benefited the whole situation, especially for the Germans.
In my paper is a section of a document I found at Stanford where the Social Democrats object to the plans of the Czechs to recruit Germans. This pretty much tells the span of reactions in the whole situation.
Okay, we'll get to that. Now let's make it, why don't you go through what I had asked before about, you said in 1918 it really started with this idea of transferring the Germans as soon as Czechoslovakia was created. But it was in 1938 that there is evidence or documents of from Benesch writing about the interest in a limited transfer at that time. And then in 1940, there are more documents. You want to tell us about those?
Well, in 1938, he was still in charge of Czechoslovakia. In trying to appease Hitler, he proposed some limited transfer of populations and part of the country. So, you know, the idea wasn't all German, that just separate the Czechs from the Germans. And then in 1940, he gave speeches at various institutions, academic and otherwise, where he started to almost demand the separation of nationalities in the post-war Czechoslovakia. And people tell me it started in 1918, but I have proof only since 1940. And that's enough to me because it rejects the idea that it was a spontaneous reaction of the resistance fighters against the cruelties of German occupation.
Yes. Well, now, these transfers, how are they supposed to take place? I mean, if you move a certain amount of the German population out of that area into Germany, is that it? Then what happens to their property? You know, how are these transfers going to work? Nobody wanted to leave their land and their property.
Correct. I mean, the details, I have to go back to the manuscript I have. Or I should talk to the historian Brown and find out what he has. I don't think they were very clear about it. It was mainly the nationalistic idea to separate nations or nationalities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. And so there are several papers that you point out here that Benesch was involved in. And then you point out his connection with Stalin. And why don't you tell us about that?
Well, see, that's the third part. I mean, there's three parts of this paper. One is the memorandum, or the one I found at Stanford. One is the end as a response of the Social Democrats. And the third one is those discussions Benesch had with, in particular, Molotov, that's very written up in much detail. He went to Moscow in December 1943 to sign a post-war friendship and cooperation pact with the Soviet Union. And during this time, he had a chancellor, or chief of his chancellery, by the name of Jaromír Smurný. And this fellow took the detailed diary notes of what transpired during those discussions. And I think those discussions, or what Smurný has written down, what another historian, Wojtek Mastny, then published and elaborated on, those writings are very informatory about Benesch's stand against this Germans. He calls them the Staten Germans. He calls them the worst war criminals of them all, who deserve the severest punishment.
Yes. Yes, let's make that clear to the listeners. Benesch is saying in 1943 that those Germans who were Czech Germans living in what was the Sudetenland, which is now, I don't know, Czechoslovakia. Well, no, because now it's under German occupation again, so it's called, was it called Sudetenland again? At that time, was it Moravia? Or was it Bohemia?
Part of Bohemia and Moravia. Yeah. Together, the name called it Sudetenland.
Yes. And those people living there, he said they were the worst war criminals or of all. The worst Germans that existed were those ones in his country of Czechoslovakia, right?
Yes.
That's how much he hated them. And he hated these Germans from way back. And now, yes, Let's go back again. And so he was collaborating there with Stalin and talking about how really they really needed to get rid of them because they were such awful people. And they need they didn't want them in their nation. Now, let's go back to what role the British played and make that clear to the listeners.
Let me point out one more thing. In Moscow, during those discussions, Beneš offered nationalization not only of the German industries and possessions, but also of the Czech one. I mean, he committed treason to his own people to get his plans approved.
Back to your earlier question. Well, to give his plans approved by whom? By Britain? By Stalin? He was trying so hard to get along with Stalin then, is that right?
Well,
that he was promising everything. And he's one who basically sold the Czechoslovakia into the Soviet Union, really, isn't he?
Yes. To a large extent. But all I know is he handed Molotov a couple of documents, which were his plans for the expulsion of the Germans. Whether it was a British memorandum or not, I am not fairly sure. But I know, according to Mr. Brown, Seton Watson, the Brit, handed Beneš a copy of Mapert's memorandum, which was signed secret. So I know Beneš had information about this memorandum, and I would say he was this one which he handed Molotov as his plans for the elimination of the Germans from Czechoslovakia.
And this Seton Watson was a member of the British delegation to the Paris Peace Conference of 1919,
yes,
you say. And so, you know, this goes back again to the end of World War One and the plans that these people had. And then Hitler, really, and in my opinion, Rudy, Hitler put what do you say about that? He really got in the way of these plans that they had, and they couldn't do much about it. They kept going along with them, and finally, in 1939, they decided to put an end to it and stop him once and for all, because he wasn't going. You know, they were not able to carry out their program the way they wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this Seton Watson was a scholar, but also a working with a British secret service. And he got to know Masaryk, the first president of the Czechoslovak Republic, during World War One. And in a book by one Joseph Kalvoda, The Genesis of Czechoslovakia, he pointed out that there was a close cooperation between Masaryk as a spy in Austria-Hungary and Seton Watson in Great Britain. So, you know, this collaboration, this connection between Czechs and some Brits goes back to World War One in some clandestine work in Austria. And then, of course, Seton Watson apparently was a very admirer of Masaryk and later probably also Beneš, and he did all he could to dissolve Austria-Hungary and create this new state called Czechoslovakia. Incidentally, there's a book by one Mary Hyman. It says Czechoslovakia, the state that failed.
Mm-hmm.
So this says a lot. But going back to the British-Czech connections, yes, Seton Watson was amongst the delegation to the peace conference in Paris, and he knew exactly that 3 million Germans were incorporated into a Slavic state. And he was aware of the problems from the very beginning. And he was instrumental in getting this Mapert paper about the expulsions to Beneš.
Yes, and that's an important point. I'm glad you brought that up. I passed over that. You write that according to the 1930 census, Czechoslovakia consisted of 14 and a half million citizens, almost 10.5 million were Slavs, and 4.5 million were non-Slavs. Of that number, 3.3 million were Germans. And they did that. They put that all together on purpose. Do you have any idea what who was in charge then, Benesch or Masaryk?
It's,
and that was 1930.
Masaryk.
Okay. Do you have any
Masaryk
idea?
Masaryk was president. Benesch was foreign minister, foreign secretary.
Do you have any idea what Masaryk thought of that? Did he want those Germans added, or did they not want them at that time? Were they forced on them, or what was the deal?
Thomas Karik Masaryk, a son of a German, a Moravian mother, and a Bohemian German Jew, hated the Germans.
He was Jewish. He was part Jewish.
Well,
Masaryk.
Officially, his dad was a Slovak farmhand, but facts point out that his mother, who worked, was a cook for a wealthy German Jew, was sired by this Jew and gave birth to Karik Masaryk, and maybe this origin. And Masaryk was educated in a German environment. He spoke better German than Czech initially, and he never lost his German accent. But
yeah.
Anyway, Masaryk hated Germans, and if Benesch hadn't done it, Masaryk would not have hindered him. Would have done it.
And so, Benesch was not Jewish in any way, was he?
No,
I didn't think
And
then let's make it clear before, so we don't forget, that there are statues all over the Czech Republic to Benesch. They refuse to see the real things that he did, and they've made him into a hero. Well, similar to so many, like the way Stalin is becoming a hero again in Russia, and so many nations. Winston Churchill is a hero in Britain, and so on. That goes with the territory, I guess, right?
Yeah. Well, Benesch is a hero. The majority of the Czechs and Slovaks agree what he did to the Germans was right and just, and they deserved it. The decrees Benesch came up with to legalize the expulsion of the Germans are still in the books. So nothing has changed, actually. And, I ask myself questions. If the Czechs would feel bad about what they did, they could blame the Brits. They could point to this memorandum by Mappert and tell the world, well, look, the Brits told us what to do, or showed us how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't need to do this, because what they did is they feel was right, and the world agrees with them.
Yes. Well, now this is where we are today still. We have these beliefs rather than facts. And what do you, because you've shown us here, and this paper shows that this was not a spontaneous uprising against the Germans in Czechoslovakia at the end of the war because of what they had done. This was something that was planned. And when this uprising occurred, it was encouraged. How well do you think it was planned and organized by the Czech police and by the Russians and so on?
Very poorly. I think it was, it was 3 days away from capitulation. They felt like now it's time to uprise, and we have easy going and show our, we are heroes anyway.
But who instigated it? Wasn't it the communists instigating it?
Well, it was Homeland Resistance. There were probably people of all political shades involved. But it was foolish. The Germans were still in power, and they gave him a hard time. And then there was this Vlasov army, the Russian Alexander Vlasov, who forms his army out of prisoners, Russian prisoners of war, supporting the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
They were stationed in near Prague, and they helped the Czechs to beat the Germans. Without them, the Czechs would have lost a war just before the war had ended.
Without the Germans? Is that what you said?
Well, the Germans were in power. They were strong.
Yeah.
And fighters. I mean, Waffen SS brigades were stationed in Prague. They would have had an easy job to get rid of those uprisers had the Russians not helped them. The Russian army who got equipped by the Germans to help them fight the Russians. The Red Army. It's, you know, politics is sometimes incomprehensible.
That's right. There's no common sense, no good sense being used, and that's why so many people suffer. And there was terrible suffering. Just incredible suffering. People point to the Holocaust, which is mostly a bunch of fake information that can't be backed up. But this was really, really terrible suffering, what happened to so many refugees.
And this brings us to this forgotten genocide conference in St. Louis.
Yes.
You know, what Ann Morrison shows documents what you just said. Terrible, unbelievable suffering.
Well, tell us, I did want to bring that up at the very end. So tell us about this conference, and you attended it and just a couple weeks ago. And the problem that Roar we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in 3 minutes.
What if I told you that in truth, you don't owe a single penny, and that the banks know this and hope you don't find out? Here's where we come in. Free2Prosper.com specializes in a profound debt repudiation method which challenges the validity of your so-called debts, morally frees you from the burdens, and protects your property. Our system is often superior to settlement, bankruptcy, or consolidation, which often leave you in a worse situation. If you feel the moral obligation to take care of yourself and your family, then I urge you to consider taking action right now. The economy will not wait. If you want to know more so you can prosper through the economic collapse, all while staying honorable and true to yourself, then call 877-417-8393. That's 877-417-8393. Or visit free2prosper.com right now.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees, just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
This is an important message from HempUSA.org for our listeners who are advancing in age, baby boomers, and to all who want to be healthy. We urge you to try our microplant powder and see the difference it makes in your life. Please visit HempUSA.org and read about microplant powder. It's easy to take, one heaping tablespoon in any liquid 3 times a day. Call 908-691-2608 or visit HempUSA.org. Please inform your family, friends, and relatives about this incredible product. It can change your life if you give it a chance. So try microplant powder today. Call 908-691-2608. In this toxic world, microplant powder can help now in cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, viruses, fungus, and bacteria. Please download our catalog at hempusa.org today.
Back, and Rudy, we have 4 or 5 minutes, and in that time, 5 minutes it looks like. So in that time, I would like you to tell us about Ann Morrison's conference, which you attended and spoke at, and whatever you think would be most helpful for us to know about it. But don't leave out what happened, what sacrifice Ann Morrison has had to make.
Another piece or stone in the mosaic, depicting truth and facts. She had to choose a project as part of fulfillment of a degree. I think it's a master's degree in social sciences. And of all possibilities, he chose to show the forgotten genocide, which James Park, by the way, calls hidden genocide. It's not forgotten, it is hidden.
Hidden, yes.
But she had interviews done with mainly Balkan Germans, Banat Germans, and Donau-Schwaben, and they described their ordeal, you know, the few which are still alive. They described the ordeal they went through in those days. Now, Anne immediately got put in the corner of together with the neo-Nazis and right-wing radicals and so on and so forth, and she was evicted from the college. Last year, the venue was facilities at Merrimack Community College in St. Louis. This year she was not allowed to do it there because she is considered far right. So she rented a space in a Holiday Inn, a conference room, and held the conference anyway.
Now, Anne Morrison is, as I understand it, she is of Polish descent, and she's married to a man who's of German descent. Is that correct?
She told us she married into a Jewish family. A woman of Polish extraction marrying in a Jewish family.
Oh, a Jewish family. I didn't know that.
It's even more remarkable than you.
Yes,
know this.
Yes.
But look,
she's a real
truth seeker. She's determined to continue. She told me, I'll never give up. I thanked her for it. I told her whatever I can do, I'd like to help. She also told me she is not interested in politics, but in the events. In other words, she works on the symptoms and not the disease.
Right.
And
she's not interested in the things I'm interested in. She just wants to tell the story and get the true story out, right?
Yeah.
Out of compassion for the people when she recognized that nobody knew about this.
Yeah.
And she sees how unfair it is. Well, now, James Bach was one of the speakers, and he is the well-known among many people. He is the author of Other Losses and of Crimes and Mercies, two very telltale books that he has also suffered for. He doesn't get the attention he deserves. He's ostracized in many ways, right?
Yeah, well, there are many of us.
Yes.
There are tens of thousands of people in jail in Germany because they speak up for what is the truth.
That's right. People don't know that there are thousands in jail, not just the famous ones whose names they know of. Now, also tell us, is there any place where people can read this paper that we've discussed tonight? It's not on your website.
How do we distribute it? I have it. I mean, if I have addresses or email addresses or anything, I'll be happy to send it out.
So people can email you at... what is your... I can put your email address on the program schedule. Is that right? And people... Well, is that all right with you? And if people want to read the program, they can email you and you'll...